Yes, we're good. Okay, good evening, everybody. Good evening, everybody. Let me say this just before we get started. Just as a reminder, once we begin upstairs at 7 o'clock with the prayer meeting, all activity around the church, except for a couple of people in the kitchen, should cease. Anybody meeting down here, any other rooms in the church, everything is over at 5 till 7, okay? Because the moment of prayer should be the time where everyone is upstairs gathered in the sanctuary, okay? Anything else is going on, we'll have to stop until that's over, all right? Okay, thank you. Already, but it's okay. Already, we are a week behind in terms of schedule, because this week we're supposed to be on what? On kindness, all right? But we didn't really get out of the patience thing on last week, because we stopped with trying to define what agape is. Does everyone have the outline? All right, well, if you don't, she's making copies. Okay. All right. What we did last week, and you can share for now if someone at your table doesn't have one, just so they see where we are. What we did last week is we started off by introducing what agape means. We've been trying to define this for some time now. And so we sought to do it again on last week. Okay, one more time. Who doesn't have an outline for tonight? Oh my God. Okay, let me get those going. This is the word. This is the word that we tried to define on last week. And how did we seek to define that? Okay, one more time. Even the week before that, we sought to define the word agape as being a commitment in attitude and action. If you don't have it, you probably want to write this down. A commitment in attitude and action to do what? To seek the best good for the neighbor. All right, one more time. A commitment in attitude and action to seek the best good for the neighbor. All right, now, last week, what we did, I know there are quite a few. Few of you weren't here. We've been having some weather issues connected on these Tuesdays, but today's the first Tuesday tonight we had pretty decent weather, so it was good to see everybody here. So last week, for those of you all who were not here, how did we try to define it last week, agape? Okay. How did we seek to define that, though? By doing what? Okay, no, last week, how did we seek to define that? Yeah, by looking at the story of a certain Samaritan, all right? That's how we did it, because in what did we see in that parable? Paul. What did we see in that parable? Come on, y'all. Who was here last week? Let's roll. Come on. Let's go. What did we see in that parable? Yes, sir.
We saw how the Samaritan went out of his way.
Yes, sir.
Told him the self-compassion, the bandage of his wounds.
Yeah. Yeah, and all these were expressions of genuine agape. Is when he rearranged his schedule and all that. He rendered some service. He released his own silver, and so forth and so on. The bottom line is that this brother, who did not have this incident on his schedule, ended up going beyond his own, perhaps maybe even his own attitude, because here was a certain Samaritan who was helping what was in all probability a Jew. Okay, now. Someone sent me, where is Mr. Jackie Cobb? Is she here tonight? Okay. She sent me a very interesting email of just a definition, another kind of definition of agape. I just want you to listen to this, because this thing really hit me. I do read email about once a month. Anybody seen it? She sent it to me about a month ago. I finally got it. Here's how it reads. Listen to this. I was going to copy this for you, but I didn't have the opportunity, so just listen to it. It says, it's talking about agape, talking about love. There is unspeakable comfort, the sort of comfort that energizes, in knowing that God is constantly taking knowledge of me in love and watching over me for my good. Here it is. There is tremendous relief in knowing that his love to me is utterly realistic, based at every point on prior knowledge of the worst about me. Here it is. So that no discovery now can disillusion him about me and quench his determination to bless me. Oh God. Y'all not feeling that. Listen. Okay, maybe it's because you didn't hear it. Okay? Just let me read half of that again. I'm not gonna read the whole thing. His love to me is utterly realistic. That's enough right there. Because so much love is not realistic initially, because it's based on kind of nothing. Because love isn't love until it's challenged. Right? So keep on listening to this. His love to me is utterly realistic. Based at every point, it's based on prior knowledge about the worst of me and you, so that no discovery can disillusion him about me. And quench his determination to bless me. Okay, one more time, because it's still not catching. One more time. Glenn, you getting it? You got this. No, one more time. His love to me is utterly realistic, based at every point on prior knowledge. Okay? Because for the most part, we love what we don't know. Because if you knew, you probably wouldn't love. Don't look at me like that. You know I'm telling the truth. The reason you know that's truth is because once you discover and it leads to disillusionment, then the level of love is altered. Right? Somebody said to me after last week's Bible study, this agape thing is really challenging me. And I ain't so sure that I want to keep hearing about it, but it is. So that no discovery now can disillusion him about me and quench his determination to bless me. That was written by J.I. Packer, the theologian J.I. Packer. And this, anybody wants a copy of that, I can get that to you. Okay. That goes right into tonight's lesson, because if you turn to 1 Corinthians 13, chapter 13, Let's go there. Y'all get them cell phones now. Y'all can turn them off. Put them on vibrate now, okay? 1 Corinthians 13, what else? Chapter 13, verse 4. Here it reads, NIV, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy. Wait a minute. Does everybody have this with me? Okay. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4. Listen to the words. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Stop right there. The first thing it says, verse 4, is what? Love is patient. Okay? Man, I'm just dropping stuff up here. We've looked at this word before, but I thought it'd be worth looking at it again. I need your minds for just a moment. In Greek thought, there were two words for patience. Okay. We basically have one word for patience. Sometimes we'll use the word long-suffering, but that's kind of old English. I mean, when was the last time you used the word long-suffering, okay? We typically use the word patience as one word in every situation referring to any kind of waiting. Okay, the Greeks had two words. One was the word macrothumeo. The other one is hupomeno. macrothumeo has to do with patience with people. With people. The word, as we said before, literally means much heat. Macro, big, macroeconomics, microeconomics, macro is big. Thumia has to do with heat. So it literally means being able to deal with a lot of heat when it comes to people. The Greeks had a different word for when it referred to patience to situations. That's the word hupomeno, and it literally means to stand under something. Hupo means to stand, and I rather hupo is kind of under, and meno is to remain under something. So you are bearing a load that has to do with circumstances. So for the Greeks, it was a difference. There's a difference between putting up with people and putting up with stuff. They saw differently. Putting hupomeno, that's patience with a, let's say, a less than desirable working situation. say for whatever reason, it's just tough. I'm not liking this job. It's not what I want. I want to be doing something else. I feel like I'm stuck here. Hupomeno, that's that kind of bearing under a load. And you're handling the load, okay? You're taking the load of those circumstances. That can refer to sickness, whatever kind of situation that's not directly people related, okay? This other word for patience, macrothumia, has to do with, let's say, a child of yours, okay? And who just won't get the thing right, just won't act right, and you are having to kind of deal with them, put up with them. That's macrothumia. You are putting me through much heat. Okay? That's that kind of patience. All right? Macrothumia is to endure positively as opposed to despondency. That's what that word means. It's to endure, not just endure, because you can just put up with something and say, I'm just making it. I'm making it through it. Macrothumia is when you endure positively with a positive perspective as opposed to enduring with a sense of despondency. Okay? There is a difference. Am I correct? Okay. Macrothumia before it gives room to action or passion. It's to some degree, it's holding back what I could do to you. It's a self-restraint based on what you've done and the power that's in my hands. Macrothumia is to impose a sense of self-restraint. I'm holding back. Because I could go there. But that's what you call, that the church say, macrothumia. that's that sense of self-restraint. And the best example for me is Isaiah 48:9. Let's go there real quick. What do we say? 48:9? 48:9, keep a finger in Corinthians and chapter 48. Okay, this is Jehovah who has a case against his people because, as usual, they've been messing up, all right? And look at what he says about them, because he's in touch with how they've messed up. See, God's patience is not ignorance. He knows. See, it's not. If it's ignorance, it's not patience. It's just ignorance, meaning I don't know what you've done. So there's, you know, that's just ignorance. But patience comes in when there is knowledge. Okay? Look at what the Lord says, verse 8. He says, you have neither heard nor understood. He's talking about his people. From of old your ear has not been open. Well do I know how treacherous you are. You were called a rebel from birth. Okay, that's pretty deep, right? All right. But this is his reaction to them. Verse 9. But for my own name's sake, I delay my wrath. For the sake of my praise, I hold it back from you so as not to cut you off. Because if I do what I'm capable of doing, you will be cut off in terms of relationship with me. Verse 10, see, I have refined you, though not as silver. I have tested you in the furnace of affliction. He says, basically, I'm being patient with you because I'm trying to develop you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the product of my patience will be a new person. Wow. Okay. And so what macrothumia is, what biblical patience is, it is sometimes the self-restraint, the restraint I put on myself from once again doing what I could do or being who I could be in response to who you've been. Is this connecting? The prime example we have is Jehovah. Could you imagine if God sent our way what he could send our way and did not hold back God's wrath? The room would be empty. I know you think you're all that, but the room would be empty on tonight. We would have no teacher, nor would we have students. We would just have, you know, we'd have an empty place on tonight. This is a wonderful definition of what macrothumia. Okay, and then, as the author put it, macrothumia is the ability to allow someone to be imperfect. Okay, never excusing it, never condemning it, but allowing them to be imperfect. Now, what I did, this was a wonderful illustration that I think, you know, that's in the New Testament, the best illustration I see of this, is Jesus' relationship with Peter. Wow. That was a relationship where macrothumia was manifested. Okay, in a very concrete way. So let's go there. First of all, does everybody understand the difference between these two? Those two ideas, those two concepts. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes. That's dealing with people. Yep. Most of the time, or at least that's how the Greeks thought of it. And this one deals with circumstances. Yes. The question is the response that we have in dealing with people different than the response we have in dealing with circumstances? In some cases, yes. In some cases, yes. But understand, this is not my thought. I'm telling us how the Greeks thought about patience. And for them, there was a different kind of patience aimed at an individual as it was to me just putting up with some bad circumstances that I am in for them. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's some overlap, but there's also some difference. Okay, now, let's look at how this works for real in relationship. Let me ask you this. Out of anything that I've said so far in defining this word, is everybody okay with this? Does it seem easy to you? So it's easy in terms of understanding it, not necessarily in applying it. Yes, sir, real quick. Right, I hear you say our foreparents must not have heard of this. because of how they meted out punishments. Well, now understand this right here. That actually is great that you said that. Patience does not mean the absence of correction. But it does mean that as I am correcting you, even as a child, I'm still loving you. As a matter of fact, the correction is an expression of my love. Mm-hmm. And here's the deal. Even dealing with your child, for instance, or your grandchild, you correct them because you love them, but at the same time, you don't disown them. Who said that over there? Who said that? So that, hold up. So that even as you, and again, that was a wonderful point there, because within macrothumia, there's still space for correction. As a matter of fact, we'll see it right here when we go through this. John 1 and 42. Because, well, hold on. I asked you the question, did anybody find this difficult? Yes, I did. You do. Well, the question is, how do you develop a patient attitude so that now we understand that patience is not just sitting and waiting, but it's actively allowing you the space to be who you are and to restrain at certain points what I could do in terms of destroying you, all right? How do we develop a patient attitude? John 1:42. Got Jesus and Peter here. Verse 40, go to verse 40. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah," that is the Christ. Okay, so Andrew goes to find his brother Simon. What's his brother's name? What's his brother's name?
Simon.
Simon. Okay. He goes and he finds Simon. And he brought him to Jesus, verse 42. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon. You will be called Cephas." Everybody understands that Cephas, Peter, means what? Rock or stone. And that's what it means literally, figuratively. It means stability. Somebody who's stable. Now let me ask you this. How stable was Peter when Peter came to Jesus? He was just the opposite. As a matter of fact, he's probably the most unstable of all of the disciples. Yet Jesus gives him, when Jesus sees him, what does Jesus see? Jesus sees a man who's in process. And so one of the ways that you develop patience, look at those people around your table, because this is where it becomes real. Check out that person across the room. One of the ways that we develop an attitude of patience is when you recognize that everybody is in process. Because he says this right here. Peter comes to him, or rather Simon comes to him and says, "This is what you are. You are Simon in your instability. You will be Peter." And so I believe that one of the reasons Jesus was able to put up with Peter the way he did is because he understood not what Peter was, but what he was going to become. And so one of the ways for me to develop patience with you and you with me is to recognize that I am in process, you're in process. And nobody in here, as we said some years ago, nobody in here is a product yet. You are not finished. Newsflash. Now, I know sometimes you think you are, but all it takes is the right situation or circumstances to bring out the fact that you are still in process. And sometimes I believe the Lord will allow certain scenarios in order to show you that you are yet still in process so that you never become independent of Him. I love the Lord. He heard my cry. He's ahead of my life. And I love everybody. I don't have no ill feelings toward none of y'all. All right. You just let the right thing happen. And you'll see that maybe I'm not as far along as I thought I was. Because, as we've said before, there's no use in me talking about how patient I am until I've been made to wait. There's no use in me talking about how self-controlled I am until I've been tempted. There's no use in talking about me talking about how forgiving I am until I have to forgive. There's no use in me talking about how joyful I am until sorrow becomes a real option. Y'all not helping me here. All I'm trying to tell you is that I think that how was Jesus able to put up with Peter for these 3 years? I mean, he was everywhere. You know, some people you can deal with because you get a break from them. Do I have help? Sometimes y'all make me think I'm the only one in here. I think I told all of y'all what Bob Hope said, the comedian. He said, me and my wife have been married for 50 years, but we've only been together for 5 minutes. That's what Bob Hope is saying. Hey, look. Jesus never got a break from Peter. Every now and then he'd go up to the mountain trying to be by himself, chilling, praying. He'd look up and look who's coming. I know Jesus said some words. Leave me alone for a minute, you know? And so how was he able to put up with this brother for these 3 years? I think a big part of it is recognizing that who I'm dealing with is still in process. Now, what does that do for you? What does that do for you? Don't answer necessarily. You ask yourself that. When you recognize that person, those persons that you're living with, the people you're working with, the people in your ministry, your children, yes, yours, your parents, your spouse, your friends are yet in process. Quit expecting people to act like a product who are still in process. Let that soak. What does that do? The question is, in application, what does that do in terms of how you treat people and how you respond to them? When you recognize where they are. Second, how do I know, or how do I develop an attitude of patience? One is what? To recognize that everybody is in process. Okay? Second, change the second one. Change the language there, because I wasn't thinking right when I said it. Balance affirmation with correction. Wow. Balance affirmation with correction. Matthew 14:31. 14. We there? You all know the story, I think. Jesus is coming, walking on the water toward the disciples. Stay with me here. Wake up with me. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Jesus walking on the water toward the disciples. The disciples see him. Peter, they ask who it is. You know, they're tripping. It's dark outside. You see this dark silhouette kind of walking toward you. It's windy. It's rainy. Yeah, okay. right. As a matter of fact, in one of the passages, one of the accounts of this other gospel says, they say it's a ghost. Matter of fact, they say right here. They got scared and said, it's a ghost. All right. Verse 27, but Jesus immediately said to them, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. And as you would know it, Peter, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. The Lord said, come. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, came toward Jesus. When he saw the wind, he was afraid, began to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. Okay, here it is. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? Where in this verse do you see a sense of affirmation? Say it. The hand. He reached out to help a brother who was sinking. Where do you see correction? Yep. Okay. I hope this is shattering or just kind of shaking our foundations here, because at the same time, he affirms him by helping him. Okay, this is my child here. This is my grandchild here. This is my niece, my nephew, who's sinking in some stuff. So I affirm them by reaching out my hand to them. At the same time, though, I correct them. Because to just, what would happen if he only affirmed him by picking him up? This would not be the last time he'd be facing a situation where he could sink. Somebody ought to wake up here, right? And so what I'm doing in this relationship, no matter what kind of relationship it is, because at the same time, yes, I'm realizing that you're in process, but I'm going to help you to become a product through some correction, because I love you enough to not let you keep sinking. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to reach out my hand. If I see a brother who's sinking, a sister who's sinking, I ain't going to sit back and just talk about them. Look at you. Well. But at the same time, where's your faith? Okay? I need to help you to build your faith so that you face this again, you may have a different response. Because what Jesus, here we go, what Jesus is looking for out of Peter is a different response to these circumstances. And so if you face this again, I want you to respond differently. Okay, everybody got that? How do I develop, because the question is, how do we develop an attitude of patience with people? I have to balance out affirmation and correction. I'm not going to ignore one at the expense of the other. Because either one could do you damage. If it's all affirmation and no correction, I got a problem. If it's all correction, no affirmation, I got a problem. Yes, ma'am.
I was thinking also in terms of affirmation that the Lord literally invites him onto the Lord. And in my head, that's also saying, you can do it.
Perfect. No matter what you see, the fact that I said come to me means that I believe, I know that you can do this. So as I've said before, even in a sermon on this, that when Jesus says come, that's not just an invitation, but that's also a promise. Because there's no way I would tell you to get down out of the boat if I didn't think you could make it to where I am. Now understand. Jesus telling Peter to come, that's the standard. I want you to walk in this water. Because with, oh, this is wonderful. With everybody, we have a standard as how we want them to act. Right? Oh man, this is hot. This is hot here. You have a standard. I want, because I invited you off of the boat, because I'm looking for a certain response from you. And that is to walk on this water. The Bible says Peter started looking around. He lost focus, began to sink. And so if you miss the standard, I'm there to pick you up, not from a distance. I mean, he grabbed his hand. See, if you want to lift people up who are sinking, you can't do it from a distance. I ain't going to get close to him. He's sinking. I ain't going to get close to her. He's sinking. No. I'm going to get right up there with you. So that if there's any sinking, we're both going to sink together. But I'm going to help to lift you out because you missed the standard. But I'm also, while I'm lifting you, it's at the same time I'm correcting you. So that you may not miss this standard again. All right. Okay. This is all right, right? How do I develop an attitude of patience? Okay. Third. Yeah, it is. Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22. No matter what, we have to work through this tonight because I'm not going to give this another week. 22. Everybody's there? You see that, Brother Vance? You got that? I see that. You got that. Luke 22:31. Look at what it says. It says, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to have you as wheat. Okay? And then, you know, Satan wants to mess with me with that. And even after Jesus says what he's going to do for Peter, look at what Peter says, verse 33. But he replied, Lord, I'm ready to go with you to prison and to death. Okay, where did Peter mess up? Hold on. Okay. Look at verse 34. Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. See, listen. Thank you, Lord. I think that the reason why, even after Peter, let me ask you this. When Peter denied Jesus three times, I wonder why Jesus didn't have just a panic attack or just how come Jesus didn't go crazy when Peter denied him three times? He knew it. He knew that Peter already had this in him. Look, one of the ways, I'm sorry, I pick on the people who are close to me. One of the ways that I develop patience for Linda and Linda for me is that I don't have unrealistic expectations of her. So that if she denies me three times, I ain't going to jump off the roof because I knew she had it in her. I'm not excusing it in her. I'm not condoning it. But I just know that it's there. And one of the ways, and this is different from, this is where the comparison breaks down here. One of the reasons I can have realistic expectations of her is because I'm real in touch with me. And when I'm in touch with me, I understand that I have the same thing in me that's in her, and she may have the same thing that's in her that's in me in terms of that potential. So the reason that Jesus, again, doesn't fall apart. When Peter did, now, guess who fell apart?
Peter
did. Guess why? Because Peter was not in touch with what he could potentially do. So that, oh God, he was crushed to the point where the Bible says he left the fellowship, the company of the disciples, and went out by himself. Is this practical tonight? So that I am not tripping when you, when Linda, stay with me, Linda. You with me? Were you in prayer? Were you sleeping on me? Eh? Is she down like this? Huh? The reason why I don't fall apart if she denies me three times is because I knew that it was there. Now understand, Jesus was still heartbroken by Peter. Okay? Because the reason I know that is because the Bible says that when Peter denied him the third time, Jesus turned and just looked at him. And the hurt was in his eyes. Which means that even knowledge of the reality doesn't necessarily mean there won't be some sense of hurt and pain. Who said it? Yeah. Yeah. But there is a sense where Jesus didn't, I'm not going to fall apart on this because I have some realistic expectations of what can come out of you. Okay, now, man, this is unfolding so perfect for me. I didn't even know it was going to be like this. I mean, in terms of all these little things here. How do I develop a patient attitude? Focus the energy on the problem and not on the person. Matthew 16, 23. Always we look for a little context. Is everybody there? You turning with me? Who said no? Okay. Oh, good. Tell me no. I'll wait for you. Matthew 16. And what did I say? 23. Go to verse 21. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, teachers of the law, and that he must be killed on the third day to be raised to life. Peter took him aside, began to rebuke him. Never, Lord. Peter got to be getting on his nerves, okay? Every time you look up. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. Y'all missed that. You saw that, Ken? You saw that. You see that, right? Look. Yeah. He looked at Peter and said, get behind me, Satan, because I'm focusing on what the real problem is. The real problem, Peter, is that you have allowed the enemy to take over your mind. Because anybody acting this crazy, you got to have the devil in you. So let me deal with you on that level. Okay? So one of the ways, we don't have time to talk about all this, but one of the ways for me to develop patience with my brother, my sister, family, whatever it is I got to learn sometimes how to focus on the problem and get to that and not aim at the person. Because there may be a distinction between the two. And so what that helps me to do is to still love you, even if I can't stand the problem. Ooh, y'all quiet tonight on me. I tell you, y'all. I got the quiet crowd, all right. You with me, Brother Sims? You with me? You rolling with me? Okay. All right. Now, let's move along real quickly as we're going to be done within a couple minutes here. Get ready for the kids. Go back to Luke 22. This one's pretty straightforward. Don't need to spend a lot of time on this. 22, go back to verse 31 where we were before. What does Jesus say? Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strength. See, one of the ways for me to deal patiently with you is to combat what I'm seeing with prayer. And not this like this, not this prayer with attitude. Well, I'm going to pray for you. That's almost like a cussing out in prayer. That, you ever got that? Some of y'all said it. But child, I'm just going to pray for you, you know. I don't mean that kind. I mean, y'all laughing because you said it before, haven't you? Y'all said it. You said it. No. I mean a genuine, Jesus sees what's in Peter. I know, Peter, that the capacity for you to mess up is in you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to combat that with prayer. I mean the real power of prayer where I lift you up. Why? The answer is in that verse. It says, because when you turn back. Because I understand that where you are right now, you won't always be there. I'm looking for you, Peter. I got confidence in you that you're going to make a turnaround. And so I'm going to pray you through your transition. Is this like slaying the way it's slaying me? Is this slaying anybody? I mean, just... Finally, we won't talk about it. Just let me mention this last one. One of the ways for me to develop a patient attitude with you or with somebody or you with me is to recognize the power of patience. There's great power in patience. John 21. Go up before this up to verse 1. Go way up there. We're going to conclude with this, okay? Going home on this right here. Go to verse 1. It says, afterward, Jesus appeared again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. It happened on this way. Simon Peter, da-da-da-da-da-da. Verse 3. God, listen to this. I'm going fishing. Peter said. Why is that a problem? Well, because basically Jesus told him to abandon that lifestyle. Nothing wrong with fishing, okay? But for Peter, the Lord had another priority for him. Okay? He said, but Peter says, I'm going back. Okay, stay with me. I'm going to fish. Okay? And the rest of them said, we'll go with you. It didn't take much for them, you know, they'll go with you. So they went out to the boat that night, caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. Jesus is there. Okay, this is patience. This is patience. They did exactly what he told them not to do. But Jesus keeps going. Isn't the love of God something? It's just unconquerable. It just keeps on coming toward you. Even you decide that you're going fishing. In other words, you're going to do the total opposite of what God said. Guess what the Lord will do? He'll still show up on the shore. He shows up on the shore. Okay, and he's looking at them after they've caught nothing. Because by turning their backs on him, they end up in a life of emptiness. They catch nothing. Okay, he called out to them, friends, do you have any fish? No. throw your nets on the right side, then you catch some fish, okay? And they catch all these fish. Then they make their way back to the shore. They get to the shore. Jesus is cooking for them. He has food already for them. They begin to eat. Verse 15, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you still, he's calling him Simon now, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, and then the bottom line is, he tells Peter to go take care of my sheep. Peter, on the day of Pentecost, stands up and preaches. And 3,000 people join church on that Sunday. Peter, won't you see where I'm headed, reaches out his hand as he and John are on their way to the temple at the hour of prayer, and tell a man who had been lame for over 40 years, rise up in the name of Jesus. Peter is the one who goes to the house of Cornelius and ends up getting the gospel to the Gentiles for the first time. Why was he able to do all that? Was because the Lord had put up with him for 3 years. And one of the ways, Here's the line right here. Steady love is the thing that can change undesirable behavior. God. Somebody said, how long? I'm being patient, but how long? Did you hear that line? Steady love. Is the one thing that can change undesirable behavior. That's why God keeps putting up with you. Because he is looking forward to the time where that undesirable behavior, look, he literally wants to love the hell out of you. I said that I got some people who were asleep. I got their attention when I said that. Okay, that's it for tonight. That's it. Okay. Listen.